Hello, I'm delighted to say that this episode of Film Stories is sponsored by NordVPN. Now, if you're unfamiliar with a VPN, it is a virtual private network, and it's a service that basically allows you to pretend that your computer or device is in a different country. So you set a virtual location for your device, and that means that suddenly you can get access to things that otherwise you might not be able to see. So for instance, if you're a Netflix subscriber, you set your NordVPN to America, then you get a plethora of options from American Netflix rather than UK Netflix, which is where this podcast is based. You can do this with all sorts of things. You switch the virtual location of your VPN service, and then you get access to TV shows, to films, to sporting events, streaming services and such like that you just wouldn't be able to get from the UK. A quick mention too for the cybersecurity features of NordVPN, including shielding your online activities, encrypting your connection, and using threat protection as well. To take advantage of this, you need to go to nordvpn.com/filmstories. That's nordvpn.com/filmstories. And you can try it risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan. If you go to that Film Stories link, that will give you an extra 4 months free on top of the 2-year plan. And again, there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. And you will also find the link in the podcast episode description box. Hello, this is Simon Brew. I'm the editor of Film Stories magazine, and a very warm welcome to a very special episode of the Film Stories podcast.
Come with me.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
And movies that had stories.
That the story just sucks them in.
This is just the beginning.
Stories. We would be honored if you would join us.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Film Stories with Simon Brew. I am Simon Brew, as always, everything you need to know about me. The aim of the podcast, though, well, it's given away in the title. I'm here to talk of the stories of films, and I tend to talk about development stories, production stories, marketing stories, release stories, all those ingredients, really, that go towards making the films that we know and sometimes love, just that, the films that we know and sometimes love. The films I tend to cover on this podcast lean more towards the mainstream than anything else. They're films I'm interested in or invested in to some degree. Try not to do snark. I try not to punch down. This podcast is a celebration of cinema and a real appreciation that somehow films get made. In particular, that's relevant to this special episode of the podcast that you've happened upon, where I'm zeroing in on a 2024 movie by the name of American Star that at the point this podcast has been released is arriving in cinemas and video on demand services in the UK. It's already out in the US. Now, there's not actually much you need to know just to set this chat up, short of I'm talking to Gonzalo Lopez Galeo, who is the director of the film, and its producer and star, Ian McShane. Pretty much everything else we explain as we go along, so why not, let's just jump straight in. I'm going to play you a clip from the trailer from the film. The other side of that, you will hear my conversation with the pair of them, recorded over Zoom, couple of audio foibles, but I wanted to leave as much of the conversation in as possible, so do that, bear that in mind. Here's the trailer.
The target will be here in a couple of days. Get your holiday time in now.
Aren't you hot?
Very.
Perfecto for the beach. I'm Gloria.
Wilson.
What do you do?
Security. I deal mainly with business.
So why are you here?
Just making sure everything's in order.
It is. This ship, the American Star.
It's on the other side of the island. Do you always go on holiday alone?
I like meeting people.
They say there are three sorts of people in Fuerteventura. Those who live here, tourists, and those who are running from something.
I don't live here.
And you don't look like a tourist.
That then was a clip from American Star, and I'm delighted to be joined by its director, whose name I'm going to desperately try and get right, Gonzalo Lopez Gallego. Am I warm? That was better. That's better. Okay. And it's producer and star Ian McShane. So greetings to the both.
Ian McShane.
Okay. I'm not going to get out of this well, am I?
Ian, as Americans say, Ian or Ian. Hi.
Okay.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Well, Simon's nice and easy and boring, isn't it? Yeah. I'm going to stick. I'm fine, thank you very much. Can I, it sounds like a really trivial question, but can I ask how important it is that it's the two of you sat here together talking about the film? Because I've looked at a couple of interviews that you've done talking about American Star. I get a real sense of partnership here, and I just wonder if that's true and if that's usual for the pair of you.
Yeah, I think so, because we made a movie together back in 2016-17 called The Hollow Point, which is a Western noir movie, another good movie. And then he came up with this script, and we remained friends. I mean, we stayed in contact, and then he came to me with this idea of the script, which is this guy had wrote, Nacho Ferno, I didn't know at the time. And it was a logical progression from them. We worked on the script together, and Nacho changed a few things. I mean, sorry, Gonzalo living in the Canary Islands, which he does. Why don't you take it from there?
I was just following you. I was really listening. We worked together really good, and the whole was just the idea of this hitman and reflecting on the time passing and all those things. And I just told him that maybe we could have the chance to have Ian McShane to do it. So then I just went to Ian, I pitched him the idea when there were no script yet. And he liked it, and he said, yeah, let's do it. He wanted to repeat, and I wanted to repeat with him. But then it was a very long, long, long process. Like, I was talking with the writer, like, half hour ago, because he came today to London to be at the screening tonight, and it was actually the first time we were talking about it. It was 7 years ago.
I think, you know, it's a very important thing when you've made an independent film, which we actually managed to make it, and we got it distributed. You feel a deep sense of partnership that you did something together.
Yeah,
and really, we made the film together. We conceived the film together, in a sense. He directed it, I was in it, Nacho wrote it, we went to an island, we filmed it, we made the film we wanted. Luckily, we brought in a guy who I made another film with in between, another independent producer called Michael Elliott.
I was going to ask about him, yeah.
Yeah, Jawbone with, which is a
great film.
Yeah, terrific. And we actually made it, and we made the film we wanted to make, and we actually, you know, we were in New York and LA together a month ago, just, you know, talking about the film together. It's a very, very satisfying experience to be sitting next to the guy that you work with very closely, and we did something together. And here we are, enjoying the fruits of it.
I mean, I asked the question because I interviewed quite a few people involved in independent film, and to see a director and an actor stroke producer so closely knitted isn't normal to me. It just doesn't happen that, as you just described there, Ian, you're right the way through the process, especially this bit, that so many independent films, as you've had the experience with Hollow Point, I think, are getting made, and then the battle is almost doubly hard, from what I understand, just to get them seen. And it's just like the two of you in the trenches together.
Yeah, I mean, we actually got this film. I was seen in some cinemas in New York. It was seen in some cinemas.
Yeah, yeah.
And it will be here, but mainly it goes out on, you know, as they're hoping, on VOD. But we have the opportunity, and as I said, to spread the word. I mean, we're talking to you about it and talking to other. We have a showing tonight at the Picture House in Fulham. And it's when you've, you know, it's not difficult to talk well about a film that actually you think is a really good movie also. You're very proud of the work you've done, so it's doubly easier rather than just, you know, on some, you know, we're not on some massive publicity tour for some film which we have to be on. This is a product of our endeavors, which is really nice.
And as I told you before, like, it was a 7-year journey, you know? So we've been talking about the movie for very long, you know? And like, there were moments when we thought that maybe it was not going to happen. Then we found Mike Elliott, then, you know, it wasn't easy. It was a very, but the good thing, it was that the script was evolving along those years, and it was improving. We were like really doing things, and I was getting older also in those 7 years. So I was able to revise it and understand better what I wanted to do with it.
So you mentioned a name a couple of times there. I'm a boring old nerd who likes crediting writers, as you have. Nacho Ferner, who I if I've got this right, Gonzalo, you worked with him. Was it a film called, rummy pronunciation is not a good thing, but let's have a go. La Piel Azul.
Oh, yes. La Piel Azul.
So, but Ian, you also said that you conceived it there. And I just wonder what the ignition point was between the three of you, what the germ of the idea was that kind of got you to endure this for 7 years. Endure is the wrong word, but stick with it so much.
Well, they come up with the idea. Again, Hitman is a sort of just a peg to hang this script on, in a sense. It's a man who's, it's just... Like the original idea was that, but Gonzalo conceived it to be in the Canaries where he lives, not in Fuerteventura. Yeah. But Fuerteventura is this extraordinary island where this ship, the American Star, which was a luxury liner in the 30s, was being towed somewhere for scrap back in the late 90s, early aughts, and ran aground in Fuerteventura and only went under the waves about, 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. So this was served as a metaphor for the character and his life and experience. And again, out of that grew the script that Nacho and he worked on. And then we talk occasionally, and then we didn't want to make it about a hitman per se. Like, I mean, this is a story of, it's a tourist island, which is interesting. People who either live there, people live there, or they go there for a holiday. And they've got these package tour hotels. And it's like, and the story is, I love the idea of the guy goes there, the intelligence he's been given is faulty. He arrives there early. Instead of obeying his natural instincts of leaving, he finds something attractive about the place and stays. And that's the fatal mistake. And it's a classic European noir base for from there on, that he meets characters that remind him of his life. He's drawn into something all the time, knowing that he shouldn't really be there. But he's drawn into something with inevitably tragic consequences, which you have to have. There's no happy endings here. I mean, no.
Don't spoil it.
No, I won't. I have to spoil it because, I remember that with the chief investor, who was a wonderful guy, Terry Smith, who came and said, I just want to know one thing. Does it end in, is it a happy ending or is it a tragedy? We said tragedy. He said, I'm in. I said, I don't want a happy end. I said, thank you very much.
I mean, you talk about it being an independent film as well, and on at the Canary Islands too. I mean, just on a practical level, I mean, isn't the Canary Islands the windiest place on Earth? But just in terms of production sound and things like that, I'm just wondering what the nuanced little challenges were that it looked to, from interviews you've given before, this was a small crew traveling around the island, which gave you a lot of control. But I'm just wondering what you were up against that you almost weren't expecting.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't know why, but I'm used to shoot movies in not really the easiest conditions. I don't know if it's because I'm used to do independent movies, or maybe because there are no easy movies at all.
Hollow Point was Utah, wasn't it? That was out in the
Hollow Point was Utah. Yeah, and it had its challenge as well. So every movie is like that. In Fuerteventura, we knew exactly what we were expecting because I went there many times for scouting and again for understanding what I wanted to do and also doing my floor plans and everything. So we knew that it was really windy and it can be tough, but we had the chance to portray that. That was the good part of it. You really need to get advantage of the place where you're shooting the film, and to create that character. As another character in the film.
Absolutely, yeah. The location. Yeah. The location is is a huge part of the movie. I mean, it's this. Have you seen the movie, by the way, Simon?
I have seen the movie. I can prove this.
No, I wasn't.
It's the first film.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. And it's the only film I've ever seen that explains Region 2 DVD coding. And
you
know
that,
well,
if you've seen the film, you'll know that,
I love that the
essence of the movie is where it's set.
Absolutely.
When he says, that opening scene, when he says, "No, I'm going to stay," It's like a feeling that he's found something where he's, even though he knows he's committing the cardinal mistake, he stays.
I love actually that scene where you meet Ryan and you can tell that Wilson is falling in love with the alien. And Ryan Adam is saying it's like Blackpool, and then he's saying like I like it here, you know. It's like it's a completely different approach.
Yeah. I mean, Ian, going back to a role in your past, I mean, you were opposite Richard Burton in Villain, which I only saw last year for the first time, a tremendous film. But in the case of that, I would with Villain, I came to that. And with an expectation of Richard Burton that the film didn't have to do an awful lot instantly because such was his presence. It struck me watching the first half hour in particular of this film that this is what you earn through acting experience, that for half an hour there's a character I'm barely hearing, I'm just seeing, but you bring in the presence of all the roles you've done before. I mean, I knew you'd be, I was watching you before you were terrifying. You know, I before, like, how perhaps younger viewers might see you now, it's just like, I explain Lovejoy to them, they've got no idea what I'm talking about. But you bring, like, the clothing of an intimidating character by what you've put on screen. Were you conscious of that? Because this is a big leading role that you're on screen of, from what I can work out, at, what, 95% of it, an incredible amount of camera time.
I trusted him. You know, and I know the way he shoots, and I knew it wasn't going to be a continued sort of close-up of the guy. I mean, people say the close-ups are there. I'll let him talk about the way he wanted to make the movie and the way we wanted to make it. So it was like we got up every day. You know, it's like we got to the island 5 days before we shot. We did some, like, camera tests, makeup and whatever, and rehearsals, and we went through the script so everybody knew. There was no arguing when we got on the set about the script. There were no, like, arguments about the script changes. And every morning we got up, had a civilized breakfast, went out and shot until it went dark, went home and had dinner, 25 days of shooting. And then we all went, I got on an easy jet and came back to England. And he went back to Madrid. And it was like making it like the best job in the world. I mean, I really did. It was, but I, when you trust a director and you know his vision, I know his other work, and this is part of the reason why we're here too, because I think he needs to be, you know, he needs to be known as a director. I know his other work. I mean, it's not just that. That's why we're in it together, you know. I mean, maybe we'll make another film together. Who the hell knows? That doesn't matter. But he will certainly go on and make some more amazing movies.
I spoke to Dexter Fletcher once, who was directing the Eddie the Eagle movie, and he said that when he cast Christopher Walken in that film, it did so much work for the audience straight away, because there were things he could take out of the film by nature of who he'd cast in it. He was able to strip it down such that they bring... I mean, talking about you like you're not here just for a minute, Ian, but do you find that when you've got Ian McShane in your lead role, that you... Because you talked about the 7 years that you're working on it and revising it and revising it and revising it, but do you find you can strip it down when you've got an actor of such gravitas in there?
The thing is, Ian knew exactly Wilson, how he wanted to portray Wilson, that everything that he was suggesting, and I this is something I already told you once, like how he is so accurate in little details, in props, and those little things then in the end become really big in the film. Like him ironing, for example, his own suit, or, you know, little things with the with the parachute, with the toy. All those things were possible just because we were working together and having the right time to find those moments, you know, because when you have a very rigid script and you have a limited time to do it, you don't have room to find those little moments that really portray the soul of a character. But probably having all those 7 years, probably having the film in mind for so long, and then Ian also having that in mind for so long, it was like the perfect combination to really find all those little details. And I was trusting him 100%, even if sometimes I was not seeing some of his ideas or his solutions, I was telling to myself, he knows really good what he's doing, you know? And
yeah.
And sometimes I was really happily surprised when I was editing the film and finally seeing Ian, seeing his work, because when I'm directing, I see some things, but when I'm editing, I see all the things, all the details that he managed to do along the shooting. And I don't know if I'm answering your question properly, but
no, I get it.
You know, like I really wanted to tell you and to tell you how I was enjoying the film while I was editing, discovering all the little things and great things that Ian was doing with Wilson that I was not able to really capture in the moment when I was directing, because when you're directing, you have the role of the director and you have to focus on what you're doing.
But it's also like, I mean, I knew when we did Hollow Point, I watched, you know, you get a chance to observe it, and I knew he knows how to make a movie. I mean, that's, you know, instantly if you're in, I mean, let's, when you watch a movie, you know within 10 seconds if you're in the hands of a good director or not, I always think, you know, whether you're, but I mean, some take a little longer, but eventually you know, or you're impressed, and I know what working with him on Telepoint and seeing things, you go, oh yeah, I'm in safe hands. So you don't have to worry about other things which you might question with another director. Like sometimes, you know, about where's he putting the camera? What's he up to? I never even thought about that working with Gonzalo. Never even
So what was your remit in your head as a producer? Was it to be a kind of protector of that, really?
Well, to producing is, you know, on the artistic side was working with the script, getting the script right, yeah, which is why it's important that we sat down with the entire cast 3 days before. We went through the script together, didn't we? And we cut out dialogue, we worked, we rehearsed, so there was no extraneous, you know, as we say, bullshit, when actually, I can't say this, like, yeah. I can't say that. You then, and then certain scenes, which, for example, if I may, the scene with Mark Nora, the scene with Gloria, when he confronts her with the pictures in the car, was a much more extended sequence originally. And we couldn't figure out, and because of the physical terrain of where we were shooting, the way it was shot. But we came up with it in the car and and just the presence, we rehearsed it once and said, what if? And he shot it with Jose David and worked it out. It was simple. You know, this car comes off, she gets out. And then for one of the film, a few times, you concentrate on Gloria.
No.
Which it wasn't that. It was a scene between the two of them, which you didn't need. So that's instinctively when you know, you go, oh, yeah, he knows what he's doing. And Wilson's in the background of that herd is saying, you know, get off the island, just leave the island, whatever. Mm. And it's like the opening of the scene. I mean, as I always say to people when they say, well, there's no dialogue, you say, well, it is a visual medium, isn't it? Excuse me. I mean, radio is a blind man's picture show, you know, which is wonderful. But films, you don't need that. And as soon as the first opening sequence, and so then he gets in the car and you hear the click of the car, sound cuts off, and you know, you're inside Wilson. I mean, it's a cinema, grammar of cinema is very important, I think. And he knows about it, you know, which a
lot of that was my question to you, actually, because you said at the start that you kind of knew this was going to video on demand, but you got it onto some cinema screens. But it feels in two ways very particular to cinema. Number one is the look of it, which I just think is terrific. But number two, the patience of it is something I don't think television's quite, like, as much as television has done some brilliant things. I haven't seen many television shows with the patience with its character for just half an hour with us in the way that was this always cinema, because it feels like it was. And how important is it to you that it is on a huge screen? I know it's like a boring question, but I'm a bit of a cinema nerd like that.
I never thought of this as a video on demand or TV. I never think on any movie I did in that particular way, you know. I always is, but I don't think neither that it's going to be in a big screen or this is needs to, you know, I think in other terms, like about the character and about the pacing and about what's the right approach to do it. But it is true that to see it finish in a big screen it's when I understand that it makes sense how we do it, how we did it, because it works better. And to see it with an audience, you know, it's a completely different feeling.
And I think I must add to Jose David, who he's worked with for like, I don't know, 25 years. There is much to be said for a secondhand, not secondhand, just a knowledge, an implied knowledge with each other about what you want to do. And the fact that he doesn't, you know, he used to, basically one lens for the entire movie.
Yeah, I've been reading about that a bit. So can you talk to that a little bit? Because that's one lens just to give us the one view of the character. Is that right? That just the perspective?
Yes, I was obsessed with this idea of seeing everything of what Wilson is seeing and always being over his shoulder and just using his close-ups for specific moments when he's listening. And then Jose David, the director of photography, suggested, I think it will be for that you're looking for, I think it would be ideal if we just go for one lens. And if we want to get closer, you just get closer, and you want to get farther, we get farther. But somehow the camera becomes like a companion, like someone that is going to be always with the character. And it's not cheating the language. You know, it's not manipulating the language, somehow closer to a documentary style, even that the film has no documentary style in terms of, I don't know, like composition and anything. But it is true that being always with him, with this just one lens, it was defining a style somehow. It was defining the tone of the film. And it made things easier because we were never arguing about what lens to choose in different moments. We knew.
It makes it faster, presumably, as well, when you're shooting it.
Yes, it's faster.
Yeah.
And it worked. It's something that I was really, really happy with. I was not expecting it, but it took out from me some stress, you know, because sometimes it's the stress. Yeah. Like really think about the perfect, and it was easier. And every time, it's like you build your own rules to play the game, and if you follow the rules, then it's easier to confront every scene. And I know that if I have an angle and reverse angle, I'm going to do this and that because I know my own rules. And as Ian said before, then there's a moment when you decide to break your own rules for a reason. And that's, for example, when Gloria gets out of the car, and we've been with Wilson for the whole movie until that moment when everything breaks apart and then the camera decides to be with her and he's in the background, you know, and that's the nice thing of having your own rules, that you can break it and it means something different.
So you've had the film in your head for 6-7 years. You did that the 3 days of working with the cast before to shoot it. The shoot was what, about 25-ish days, something like that. I think it's around that. The other part of this that I don't think has been talked about much is you edited it in what, 4 weeks, start to finish. Is that right? Like yep. to final cut.
Yeah, but that's because I had a producer pressing or anything. It's just because I needed to put it there, you know. It was for so long inside of my head that I knew it was just like doing a puzzle, that you know how to, where the pieces are going to be, you know.
And there's no wasted footage either. I mean, no. I think there's maybe scene that wasn't in the movie, which one would be?
Well, yeah, that little thing in the bar that it was not working. Yeah, just little.
There's nothing.
It was like 98% probably, or 95%. So I was just, you know, like putting on the timeline all the scenes. It was also, we didn't have like many, many takes because it was a really controlled environment where we were shooting what we wanted to do. So that's why it took me like 4 weeks to get the first cut and show it to the producers. But that first cut became the final cut a week later with notes, with some minor notes.
It's like working with the, you know, with Oscar, the kid was great.
Yeah,
I mean,
those
are different. I mean, because we shot both the scenes. But no, the exterior scenes, one scene in the morning when you only have a certain amount of, you know, early morning, we only had a certain amount of time with the light, and before the beach was descended upon by the actual people who lived in the hotel, we had like an hour, and then the scene with the parachute at night, which was shot at magic hour, and again, we only had like an hour. But, you know, once you got, he was a great kid. I mean, he's an old soul. I looked in his eyes and thought he was older than me, you know. He's wonderful. But you just go with it together. And, you know, everything's going to be fine. There's no panic ever about, we have to get this before the light goes in or it comes up. It's like, okay, we got that. Next, move on, you know.
Appreciating people never really do promotional interviews for films and look miserable and unhappy about it. There's real passion in both of your voices for this film, which for something that's been, again, I would imagine it's had its fragile moments throughout its production. But
we've had our moments. Yeah, we're not always. I mean, we've had our moments.
Yeah. We need our time to see each other again.
I don't think I could argue with you. I just on the days when there was something start, I think I would just get too terrified. I watch too much Deadwood, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Let me tell you.
Well, you know, sometimes it films are a culmination of. I mean, I also think there was a certain amount on this which I lost my mother-in-law and my mother. Six months before the start of this movie. Thank you. 6 months before the start of the movie. And my wife couldn't come across because she was dealing with a lot of family issues. But I was there. And being on that island, I think imbued in a certain sense a natural melancholy and something else that added to my... Because I don't talk about the craft, which so many actors talk about. Even if they've only been acting for 5 minutes, they love to talk about their craft, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's like saying, it was that added something. And I've only thought about that as we've been talking about this for the last month, that there was a natural melancholy that sort of settled on me when I was working on it. And I spent most of the time alone. I mean, I used to go back to my room in the evening, go to sleep. I mean, it was a long days, but it was, and then we'd have dinner on a Saturday night, wouldn't we? We'd all have dinner on a Saturday night with the crew. And it was one of the best experiences of my life, doing it, seeing it, and being here now talking about it. I couldn't give higher praise than that, I think, to a project which I'm very proud of.
Before we round up, again, I'm just keen to give credit to people. You mentioned Michael Elliott a couple of times.
Yeah, he's great.
As someone who was pivotal to just giving
I did that movie with Mike. I'd worked with him before when he was the top first assistant. I did Woody Allen movie with him. I mean, Mike's one of
the Scoop. Yeah.
Mike was one before he formed his own company, EV Pictures, with Jim Mooney from Manchester. But he's done some really terrific independent movies, classic stuff, which is why I brought him in on this. And he was pivotal to it.
Yeah.
He's also got a great demeanor, hasn't he? He's got a great attitude towards filmmaking, knows about it. And he's, couldn't wish for a better partner.
I think this was my first film probably since I stopped doing my own independent art house when I started, like many years ago, where I had absolute freedom to do the film in the way I wanted. And I got really nice notes and suggestions, but like from a different place, you know, and working with Mike and working with Ian in that way, I feel completely like I own it, like I did what I wanted to do. So,
I don't know how to phrase this really, but after The Hollow Point went through such distribution problems, as I understand it, is it a relief really that the film's getting out in a relatively straight line, that it is being seen? Because I'd imagine you sunk your heart and souls into The Hollow Point and then just got...
Yeah, I mean, and there's one magical moment. Yeah, but it was like they tried to sell it on a completely ridiculous angle. I won't tell you what it was because it would be too personal a moment, but they had no idea how to promote the movie, how to sell it. Instead of selling it on the fact that it was a good movie, they tried to base it on a personality, which was completely ridiculous. But that was, that happens.
But also, let me tell you something that I never said before.
Yeah.
That imagine to do, how you call it, like a screen test, with the thing that the Americans do when they test the screening. Imagine
test screening,
Free, test screening.
Imagine to do a test screening of American Star. you know, and getting all the feedback from the audience about what they would do with the movie. I will take that out. I will do that. I think it's boring. Yeah. The pacing, I think there's no talking. Imagine to get that feedback in American Star and then go back to the editing room and do what the your best with that feedback. That's somehow something that happened in the Hollow Point. That's somehow something that happened there. You know, it's like you're trying to do, like, oh, I was trying to do, I was confused probably. Because this is the kind of films I like, American Star. So the Hollow Point, I was trying to do a more art house film, but not understanding that it needed to be a genre movie, you know, a more action thriller movie. And then when you try and you're in the middle of those places, then you're not satisfying anybody, you know. So I don't know if I said too much.
No, not at all. I think that's the thing. I mean, also, it's interesting. I mean, because obviously you can't divorce yourself from bad reviews or non-reviews. You look at some of the things that have been said, and I looked at some of the reviews from American Star, from the so-called top critics. Who haven't got a clue about what the movie's about, who have made them. I mean, one talked about Gonzalez's use of wide-angle lenses. I go, wow, this guy obviously knows his stuff. And then, you know, and then you read personal things about whatever, and you think, well, they don't see the movie, which is okay. But you want to go, you didn't get the movie. That's okay. It's okay. Some people don't get it. Or some people go thinking on something else. I mean, admittedly, the title of when they go, Hitman, Aging Hitman on Last Journey, whatever. I mean, but what are you going to say about it? Ex-government operative goes to Ireland for a holiday and discovers that he's got another man. It's very difficult describing a movie.
I understand
movie.
That.
You know that. You talk about it. So it's got sort of going halfway with the distributor on this, which I think was good. And I love the poster.
Oh, yeah.
I think they did a good job with it. I think most, you know, so far we've managed to sort of navigate the treacherous waters of independent, you know, shows. Yeah. Come out pretty good so far. We've been very lucky.
Yeah.
Well, I'm almost tempted to ask you about the craft of acting now, after all that, but we're out of, I was just about to say, we're out of time. You said at the start that it's different when you're promoting a film that you really, really like. From my side of the fence, I always say this to the end, it's different as well when you're talking to someone about a film you really, really like. Huge congratulations on it. I just thought it was a really absorbing piece of work, and congratulations to you both.
Thank you, Sam. It's very good talking to you. Thank you very much.
It's lovely to talk to you both, and thank you for not being scary. Take care.
And that was my conversation with Gonzalez Lopez Galeo and Ian McShane for American Star, which is in cinemas now in the UK and also available on video on demand. It also brings to an end this latest episode of Film Stories. As always, thank you so much for listening and thank you for your time. If I've not bored you completely, you can find more from me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Simon Brew. You can find Film Stories on Twitter at Film Stories, at Facebook at facebook.com/filmstoriesonline. YouTube.com/filmstories. Our Patreon is patreon.com/SimonBrew. If you go to store.filmstories.co.uk, that's where you'll find all of our goodies for sale, including our print magazines. And our website, updated with news, reviews, features, that's www.filmstories.co.uk. I'm off now to make your regular episode of Film Stories, though. So the main thing is, you all take care of yourselves. You all look after yourselves. And I'll be back soon with some more Film Stories. Bye-bye.